Across the UK, across continental North America, and around the world on the internet, by webcast and by podcast, my name is Howard Hughes, and this is the Return of the Unexplained. Well, so far so good in September, weather not bad, and look, I know some of you don't like me giving weather reports, but I'm just telling you that it's good. And, you know, I love every moment of the summer. Let's hope we get the maximum from it. This has been, apparently, the second hottest summer ever in the UK. And it's all coming to an end now, and we're heading towards winter, hopefully slowly. Thank you very much for all of your emails. If you want to email me, you always can. Go to the website, theunexplained.tv. Honed, created, and steered by Adam Cornwell from Creative Hotspot in Liverpool. If you have sent an email recently, thank you very much. You know that I get to see all of the emails. And if your email requires a personal response, then I will try to give it. And I'm still toying with the idea of doing a whole show of shout-outs, or maybe doing separate shows with shout-outs, but maybe that's one for the future. I'm still kicking that idea around this this thing that I call a brain. Other people have different words for it. So thank you for your emails. When you get in touch, please tell me who you are, where you are, and how you use the show. You've stopped doing that lately, so please do that. Let me know where you are. It's always nice to know where you are and, you know, how your life is going too. Ideas, guest suggestions, all those things, thoughts about the show, always gratefully received, you know. I don't think I could do any of this without you. I know it. TheUnexplained.tv, and that's also the place to go if you would like to leave a donation for this work to continue. Thank you very much indeed. Okay, the guest on this edition, medium, author, and remarkable person, Karen Noe is here from New Jersey, USA. She's got a new book out. She's had a number of books out. She's been a medium like this for 20-odd years. She's rather different, though, from mediums we've had on this show before, as you will hear. And one of the ways that she's different is the source of some of the information that she is now passing on. I'm not going to spoil it by telling you any of this, but I recommend that you listen. You know, pour yourself a drink of whatever you like to drink. Sit back and listen to Karen Noe, and then tell me what you think about her. More great guests always coming here on The Unexplained, and your guest suggestions always gratefully received. Okay, let's get to New Jersey, United States of America, and speak with Karen Noe. Karen, thank you very much indeed for coming on my show.
Thank you for having me on.
And listen, I've got a feeling I've been mispronouncing your name. Up to now, I've been saying Noe, and I think it's not, with a kind of European twist to it, I think it's not that way. How do you say it?
It's Noe.
Noe.
Like Joey Noe,
or
like that.
which, of course, it isn't today. It's Snowy. Or whatever. Okay. Thank you for doing this. I want to just start by telling your story, because the biography that your publisher sent me underlines something that I discovered online anyway, really, that you are very successful at what you do. You have, according to this biography, a 2-year client waiting list. You know, how did you get to be where you're at?
Oh, my goodness. I did it reluctantly. I didn't want to be a medium. But about 25 years ago, I was going through a difficult time in my life. And I just sat at the edge of my bed and I yelled at God. And I said, am I going to be okay? And with that, I saw a light that came towards me from the other side of the room. And as it was approaching me, the first thing I said is, if you're not of God, please leave. But the more I said that, the more it came, you know, it continued to come closer to me, and it eventually enveloped me. At that time, I received such an overwhelming sense of peace that I can't even, you know, put into words. But at that time, I heard an audible voice that said, Lucia Lucina, Bella Lucia Lucina. And for those Italian listeners, they may know what that means. It means light, little light, beautiful little light. I've since learned that that was St. Francis of Assisi, who's been guiding and protecting me ever since. And if, for those who have followed me on Facebook or in my, I've written 5 books. And if you follow me in my books, I always talk about the peace on earth, the cute animals, and so forth. That's my St. Francis connection. But right after that experience, I started to receive messages from deceased loved ones and the angels. And I didn't want to do this, as I was saying before, but the more I shared the messages that I was given, the more I saw it brought peace to the living loved ones. Mm. And at first, I just I decided to just do healing, Reiki energy healing, in the back of a hair salon. And when I started to do that, I started to receive messages from those who've passed as I was doing the healing.
Gee, so was this in New Jersey, where you're based now?
This was in New Jersey, correct. Yes.
So listen, the people there are lovely, but they don't like being taken for a fool. They're pretty tough one way and another. They're also very warm, I have to say. I mean, I love it there. I had some relatives who went from Liverpool to live there, so I kind of know Clifton, Passaic, those sorts of areas. So I don't know. I don't know how far away that is from you, but let me tell you, if you're in a hair salon and you start passing messages on from people like your great uncle Fred says that you're going to pass those exams you're going in for, not everybody's going to take that so well.
Well, what happened was they did come to me as an appointment for healing. So they were open to the messages, but the messages that came through were not vague. They were very profound messages that only the deceased loved one would know and the living loved one. For example, when I first started receiving messages, I was doing Reiki on one of my clients, and a person named Robert was trying to come through, and he said he passed in a car accident, but then he showed me a kangaroo with boxing gloves on. Now, I'm in the United States. We don't have boxing kangaroos here. Mm. So, you know, I didn't want to share the message that was, you know, so I said, okay. The gentleman kept coming through trying to show me this picture of a kangaroo with boxing gloves on. So finally I gave the message and I said, there was a gentleman named Robert. He died in a car accident and he's showing me a kangaroo with boxing gloves on. And she jumped off the table and she said, that's my friend Robert. He died in a car accident and he boxed kangaroos in Australia. So those are the types of messages that came through. And what happened was, you know, from that point, she told a few people and then they told a few people and then they told a few people. And eventually I was booked a couple of years ahead of time. And at this particular time, I'm not taking any new clients because I'm so booked up. And I know, you know, what I'm going to be doing in a few years. I'm traveling for my books, etc.
But I mean, look, that particular message about the boxing kangaroo, I don't think such things happen anymore, which is good news. But that's so specific. I can't think, unless you've been primed in some way or you'd seen something that you didn't consciously note that you had seen, I can't see how you could possibly know that other than by being, you know, what you say you are.
Right. But, you know, I believe, and I never mind, I believe, I know without a doubt that my purpose on earth is not to show people what I can do. My purpose is to empower people to do what I do, because I truly know that we all can connect with our loved ones and the angels. We can. Mm. Most people don't realize how to do that, you know? And so I teach a lot of classes about how to do that. I teach people how to raise their vibration so it's more on par with the energy of who their loved ones are on a very high level.
You say that anybody can do this, Karen, but I have to say, you know, over here, all of us have bereavements. I've lost both of my parents. I was incredibly close to them. I don't think I'm ever going to get over it, and I think my life will never be the same again. And I have to say that even though I do a show like this, okay, I'm also a broadcaster, journalist, so, you know, I'm firmly anchored on the other side of broadcasting in the real world. You know, I am very open to these things. And the number of times when I've had problems, difficulties, and life has been a struggle, and I haven't begged, but I've done what you did. I've asked for communication, and I haven't had it. And I was incredibly close to my parents, and I'm very open-minded. How come it's not happening?
Well, what happened was when you're grieving, when you're angry, when you're begging, your energy is not on par with the energy of who they are. So what you have to do is raise your vibration so it's more on par with their energy and do whatever it takes to make you feel better before you ask them to come to you. You know, that's the first thing. And the second thing is most people expect to hear a voice or to see an apparition of their loved one, whereas their loved one, your parents, they don't have a physical body. So they probably are speaking to you telepathically, that is, in your thoughts. And most people think, you know, you're thinking of your loved ones anyway. You're thinking of your parents. So I would teach you how to differentiate your thoughts from their thoughts. And it's very simple. Your thoughts will have an originating thought. So, for example, you saw a picture of your mom, which triggered another thought. That's you. But if a thought pops in your head for no reason, maybe something she would have said or done, you know, just pops in your head for no reason, chances are she's speaking directly to you, if that makes sense.
It does. That's a hell of a thing to be able to do then, to differentiate those thoughts, because we all know that the mental dialogue that all of us have going all the time is a constant chatter.
Yes. So when all else fails, what I would say is ask your mom and dad to give you a, I call it without a doubt sign, to let you know that they're with you. And then you have to be patient and wait, and the sign will come when you least expect it. Now, the signs come in different ways. You know, sometimes they like to play with electricity. They turn the lights on and off, or they come as numbers that show themselves to you, you know, maybe 1111 over and over.
Oh, I guess, and look, I know I'm not alone, and I'm not a crazy. I get the 1111 thing all the time.
See? So what you do now is acknowledge it. Now, once you get the 1111, say, Mom, Dad, is that you? And then when you ask that, be patient. Say, give me a sign to let me know it truly is you. And you have to be patient. So whether or not, you know, they come to you in a dream that night. Now, there are dreams that are real visitations, but then there are dreams that are dreams from our subconscious. So you have to tell the difference again with that. A true visitation will feel wonderful. You know, they'll come healthy. Older people would come younger in the dream, but you would wake up knowing without a doubt that they were with you. Whereas a subconscious dream, you'd wake up from that dream and you'd feel, you know, maybe it was frightening how they passed, or, you know, they're mad at you. That's your subconscious trying to resolve issues.
Now, isn't that interesting? I didn't think we'd be talking about dreams here, but I'm fascinated. I think we all are by dreams. I frequently have dreams to do with my parents and the home that we used to live in Liverpool. But the one thing about those dreams is I can't see them. In these dreams, I am aware of their presence. They're somewhere, I know they're somewhere around, but never have I had a dream involving them where I've seen them. And I've been in these dreams back to the house where I was brought up, but I don't see them. I know they're around somewhere, and I know that their absence is somehow noted, but there's a presence as well as the absence, but I've never seen them. How come?
Well, there are two reasons for that. If it's a subconscious dream that you're trying to resolve issues about your childhood, but it sounds to me that it's a true visitation and your parents don't have a physical body. They're coming to you spiritually. So you feel their presence, you know, you're feeling them. And that's what most people don't understand. They're expecting to see them or to hear their voice where, you know, they can do that, but it's a little bit more difficult for them to do.
You talk about this in such a matter-of-fact way. Let me wind you back just a couple of minutes in this conversation to the point you were telling me where this began. You were working at the back of the hair salon in New Jersey, and people were coming to you, and you were getting more popular, and you were getting more confident. Did you not at that stage start thinking, what the hell is happening to me?
Yes, I did. And I did not. I was a very shy person. I didn't want to share these types of messages. I didn't want people to think I was not in my right mind. But when it was more about how may I serve, you know, how may I serve people? How may I serve others? When I thought in those lines, then it was okay. And then I was able to do this. It's not frightening at all. It's very peaceful. And I see the peace that it brings to the living loved ones to know that their deceased loved ones truly are with them and are okay.
My listeners, some of them very skeptical, but they all love, the ones who are not skeptical, the ones who are skeptical, they love to hear real life stories. You've told me one about the message from the kangaroo fighter that brought a certain amount of comfort because that was a sort of verification. Sure. Have you got any more stories where that came from? I mean, I'm not going to ask you for anecdotes all the time, but just to get the ball rolling here.
Oh, I have many stories. I know a few minutes ago I was telling you how our loved ones don't give us messages as a voice, an audible voice. But yet, when my own mom passed a few years ago, you know, I said to her, I really would like to hear your voice one more time. You know, even though I know she probably wouldn't be giving me a message with a voice. Mm-hmm. But a few nights later, I came home from work and I was tired and I took a nap. And I had a quote unquote dream, but it wasn't a dream. It was a true visitation from my mom. And in the dream, I was in a crowded place, and over the loudspeaker, my mother's voice came through, and she said loudly, "I have an important announcement. I have an important announcement." And in the dream itself, I said, I knew it wasn't a dream. I said, "Mom, thank you so much for coming. I love you so much. Who is with you?" And she said something that I didn't recognize. And I said, "Mom, say that again." And then she said, "Nanny, who is my grandmother." And with that, the phone rang, woke me up, and I was able to remember the dream. Now, what happens is if we have a dream of our loved ones, we have to wake up after the dream or else we won't remember it. So I would ask, you know, tell our listeners to ask your loved ones to come to you in a dream and wake you up after the dream so you remember it. But I have to tell you, I felt like I won the lottery that day. It felt amazing. I knew that she was with me. I knew it without a doubt. So, I mean, I could tell you many stories from clients, or, you know, if you'd like to hear them.
I would love to. I mean, I think we should do a couple, maybe stories from clients that that get us, that, you know, give us a little bit more understanding and also help some of the people who are perhaps more skeptical about these things to get a grip on this.
Okay. Again, I would say for people to be skeptical, and that's why it's important for them to do it themselves rather than rely on someone else to give them
the
message.
So you are saying, crucially, that somebody who is skeptical but interested, but fundamentally they don't believe in this stuff.
Yeah.
You're saying, because you said at the beginning of this, anybody can do this. Even somebody like that could get a result.
Yes.
All right.
They have everything to gain and nothing to lose by asking their loved ones to give them a sign, you know, to let them know that they're with them. They have nothing to lose by asking them to come to them in a dream and to wake them up. And when they receive this type of sign, they will know what I'm talking about, because oftentimes it's best when they receive it themselves rather than going to someone else. Because I love doing this for people, you know, but it's not about the hour that they're with me. It's about tomorrow, next month, next year, you know, that type of thing. Their loved one truly wants them to know that they're with them and are okay. You know, but they just, the living loved one just needs to know to be on the lookout for these types of signs.
All right. Before we get to those stories, let me ask you this. And I don't know why I'm asking you this, but somebody up there is obviously steering me in a direction. Have you ever, it's something that's fascinated me always, why it isn't possible, or as far as I'm aware, it's not possible. Maybe it is. For somebody who is about to die to arrange to communicate with a specific person, perhaps at a specific time. Now, I've never really heard stories about that. Can that happen?
Yes, that can happen. Absolutely. Absolutely. You could say, you know, give me a, as soon as you cross, you know, come to me in a dream, or, you know, go to Aunt Lulu, whatever, and tell them, you know, someone that's open to this type of thing, and give them a sign and let us know, you know, that you're okay. We would tell them, yeah, you could talk to your deceased as they're crossing over. Absolutely. Yes.
Okay, all right. Because, you know, I'm sorry for personalizing this, just apologizing to my listener, but, you know, the only examples I have are from my own life. You know, we're all the same.
Yeah.
My father was very much into all of this. He had a number of experiences. He was a policeman, and he was a good cop. Everybody liked him. But, you know, he came from that kind of family. His father used to read in the deep days of the Depression, when times were tough. His father used to read teacups for people, read the leaves in the teacups, give them psychic readings. And he was a little connected. And so was my dad. So, you know, I would have expected my dad to return to me in some way because of his connection. But, you know, other than in ways like the numbers and the occasional feeling, there's been nothing more tangible, nothing more concrete.
But those are wonderful ways that he's communicating with you. And the reason being, when you set out, you were begging them, or you almost begged them to come to you. Now, there's a difference between begging and knowing that they're coming. You see, when you beg someone, it's almost as if you don't believe they're going to give you that sign or come to you. So what you're going to do is, Dad, Mom, thank you for coming to me and giving me a sign. Thank you so much. And feel it as if it's happening now. Feel the feeling of your wish fulfilled. And then you will feel them. They will truly come to you. You have to know it's going to happen.
Isn't that self-delusion?
Nope, it's not self-delusion. It is the faith that all the great masters talked about. Jesus, Buddha, Muhammad, all of them, they said, if you have that faith, it will happen, if that makes sense.
Yes, it does. Okay, well, I'm sorry I interrupted you. We were going to do a couple of anecdotes roll the ball along.
Yes. So you want a story. So there was a woman named Teresa. She had been trying to come in to see me for a reading, but I was booked for a couple of years ahead of time and I couldn't get her in. So I told Teresa, you know, come to a class. You know, I teach classes on how to communicate with your loved ones. You know, come to this class and I know you'll learn a lot. So she came to the class. I never met her before. And as I was speaking, you know, her dad started to come through from the other side. And I said, there's somebody named Tom trying to come through. And she said, oh, that was her dad. And that's who she wanted to communicate with. I said, oh, wonderful. And she said, can you ask him where the missing money is? So I said, now, this is very specific, right? So he showed me in her attic, in the corner of the room where the pink insulation was, if she moved the insulation over, there would be a lot of money behind there.
Oh, my God.
Yes. So she said, okay, I thought I looked everywhere, but I'll look there when I go home. So I finished the remainder of the class, and when the class was over, my phone began to ring. You know, everybody went home, and she was so excited. She said, Karen, I went home, I went to the attic in my house, just as you said, and I pulled the insulation out, and right behind the insulation was a substantial amount of money. So there you go. But that's the type of things that you would like to, when you receive messages, that those types of signs that you have proof.
Right. Did she give you any of that money as a reward?
No, I don't want it. I mean, you know what my reward is? To help people.
Oh, that's nice. Okay, and if you've got one more like that, I'm... raring to hear it.
Yes. So let me see. Okay. I like to bring up my favorite ones. There was one of my clients, her name was Christy, and she had, the first time she came to see me, I saw around her four babies that had passed, and they were all the same age. So, you know, I didn't understand it at first, but I said, you know, Christy, it feels like you lost four babies, but they're all the same age. Did you lose quadruplets? And she said she did. So, it was very sad. And she was crying and, you know, it was very traumatic. But they were coming through and they were coming through with the names of her grandparents. I can't remember their names, but the grandparents were saying that they had the children. And they said these two of them were going to be coming back, you know, reincarnate.
Only two of them were coming back.
Yes, yes. So, I think it was about 6 or 7 months later, I was sitting in my office meditating for another client. But as I was doing that, I saw Christy's face and I saw her grandparents and they said, Christy is pregnant. So I said, oh my gosh, this is so wonderful. I called Christy. I said, I just saw your grandparents. They said you're pregnant. And she said, I am. I said, well, that's what they're saying. She said, okay. Let me see, you know, let me, I'll take the pregnancy test. So she hung up the phone, and right after that, I went to lunch. And as I was driving to lunch, a car cut me off. And on the license, it said 2 quads on the license plate. So I said, oh, my gosh, 2 of the quads are coming back. That's what they're trying to tell me.
To their original mother.
Yes, yes. So I was so excited. I called her back the next day and I told her what happened. And she was so excited that she was indeed pregnant and has since given birth to twins.
Now, has there been, presumably you're still in touch with her. I suppose from a research point of view, wouldn't it be interesting to know if you say that two of them were coming back, if they exhibited any knowledge of what went before?
Yeah, that's something I asked her too, but they don't seem to remember anything. Because they did pass away as newborns, you know, so that was a little bit more difficult. That type of thing works very well when somebody's an older, you know, even a child or an adult, and they come back and they remember their past lives. It works in, you know, in those aspects.
And although those circumstances may be rare, have you come across that?
Myself, I'm afraid of water. And I had a past life regression, and it was a long story. I don't want to take up your whole thing, but I saw myself as one of the Vikings. I know it sounds crazy, but I fell off the boat and I drowned. So now I'm still afraid of water, but I overcame it to understand that this particular life, I don't need to be afraid of water anymore. Mm. So, yeah.
Now look, I've got a press pack from your people. About you. And it mentions that you are quite happy to discuss your thoughts on what happens when we leave this plane. In other words, when we die. Because I think you show me a man who says that he's not afraid of death. And I'll show you somebody who's not really being honest with himself, or indeed herself. What happens? It would be a tremendous help if anybody could give us a handle on what happens, both immediately when we go, and also once the initial trauma or experience of having crossed over is done, what happens then?
So what happens right after you pass, you're greeted by your loved ones, including animals, pets, your family, friends, everyone. It's total peace. And you are actually immediately at a higher vibration. All no more suffering, none of that. You're able to see through each person's eye that, how you affected them. In other words, you go through a life review where you're able to see through these people's eyes, because in reality, we are all one. But you don't feel that oneness when you're in the physical body. It feels like I'm over here and you're over there. But after you leave the physical body, you're actually able to feel that oneness. And that's why you're able to feel how you affected each person through their eyes.
No, sometimes that's not going to be to the good, is it? I mean, sometimes, even inadvertently, we may have hurt people.
Yes.
We're going to feel that then.
You will feel that, but you will still, now if this makes sense, you'll still be very much at peace, but you will see the bigger perspective of how you affected each person. It's almost as if you know certain things you found out here in life. Oh, I did this to someone else. I feel badly about that. You understand I shouldn't have done that, right? But you are very much at peace when you're on the other side. And oftentimes when they come through, in messages, they are, they come through and they say, I'm sorry, for example, I hit you with a mirror on your birthday. That's, some of the messages that they give. They're able to see how that has affected you, but they also are able to see how they affected you in a positive way as well. And they're also able to see how they affected themselves. Too often, many light workers love to give to other people and are very loving and kind, but they don't treat themselves with the respect that they deserve. And when you go through a life review, sometimes you're able to see that you didn't treat yourself kindly.
Mm. I keep being told by people I work with, Howard, you don't believe in yourself. You don't believe in yourself. You don't believe in yourself. I wonder if I'm going to have to confront that when my days are done.
You know what I would tell you before it's too late? Try to treat yourself right now with the respect that you deserve. If you understand we all have God within us, we have source energy, and we could all create miracles in our lives, every one of us, including you. And the only difference between a miracle worker and one who is not is that the miracle worker knows it. So if you could just realize who you really are, and with just that knowledge, everything will change. And just love yourself. I have a problem with that myself, loving myself. So I understand where you're coming from.
I think if people are being honest, I think it goes for an awful lot of people. It's just that you and I are more honest about it. I will get emails about you. And there will be people who will love you, and there will be people who will castigate me for having you on here. What have you had another medium on? I haven't had a medium on this show for a long time, but, I continue to be interested in this, and I continue to think that there is a probability or a possibility that there is a lot in this, simply because of experiences in my own life. But I am willing to accept, that is the skeptic and professional in me, that I may be wrong. When you are confronted by, and you must have been in all of these years, by skeptics and people who tell you that you're offering people false hope and that you're talking complete trash, how do you counter that?
Well, first of all, I'm not here to change anybody's mind at all. I would tell them they have everything to gain and nothing to lose. I would tell them about energy. Energy doesn't begin and it doesn't end. So the energy of who we are continues even after the physical body dies. That's what science tells us. Energy does not begin. It changes. So if you put water in the middle of a room, it would evaporate. It would still be in the room, but it would be in a different form. And so it is with who we are. Now, the energy of who we are continues. So when we come back, when we cross over, if we were loud on the physical plane, we'll be very loud when they come through. If you have a loved one who is very quiet on the physical plane, the energy of who they were will continue to be quiet. So it would be very difficult to hear them because they were quiet. You know, that's their personality. It doesn't change.
I don't think, Karen, I've ever asked a medium this question, and I don't know why I haven't done it in all these years, but people pass, die in various ways. And some of my friends will tell you, and they're very calm about this, and they've accepted this in their own lives, that when you pass, however you go, it's oblivion after that. So you better live this life for all it's worth, because there's nothing after this. Others will say, no, I don't believe that. I think there's more, and we go on from here. Let's leave those two polar opposites aside and ask, what happens, do you believe, from what you've heard and what you know, you say you know, what happens? People pass in a whole variety of ways. I mean, sadly, here in London, we get people who are murdered. There are people who die in road accidents and aeroplane accidents, or they die peacefully in their sleep. How much of those who suffer as they go, or maybe they die in hospital of some illness, some disease, you know, how much of that do you believe and do you understand people experience? Is there a cutoff point, in other words, where the suffering ends and the transition begins?
The suffering ends immediately. Now, this is not something I believe. It's something I know without a doubt. And my wish is for everybody to understand that, too. It's total peace and love immediately, right after you cross, no matter how you made your transition. I would tell people to look into books from people who have had near-death experiences. That's those who actually have been clinically dead and come back to talk about it. There's a wonderful book called Dying to Be Me by Anita Morjani, that she actually was clinically dead. She was in the last stages of cancer and passed, you know, and she was clinically dead. And she saw on the other side her father, and she saw her best friend. She went through her life review, and she saw that she didn't treat herself with the respect that she deserves. And what happened was somebody told her, I believe it was her father, that said, it's not your time. It's time to go back. And, you know, she didn't even want to go back because it was so peaceful. And she didn't want to go back to a sick body. But she did. And she went back to her body, and she remembered everything. And within a short period of time, I believe it was a few months, her body was completely healed. And her life purpose is to teach people self-love from what she experienced. So what I would do is tell people who are skeptical to read the books of people who were actually declared clinically dead and what they experienced and how they changed when they came back in the physical body and how they healed their body. No, there's no logical explanation how they healed themselves and so forth. And again, you know, I'm not here to change anybody's minds, but if they're open to it, to look into it, at least.
One of the things that by reading about you, I discovered about you, and I hope it's right, you tell me if it is, if it isn't. You say that you know ways that you can get people, assuming these things happen anyway, you can actually get people to have their whole life review now rather than wait to die for it. How does that work?
Well, this is not even metaphysical. What happens was in a life review, we're able to see how we've affected each person through their eyes, as I said before. And one of my books is called Through the Eyes of Another. What I did was I conducted an experiment because what happened so many times in an appointment, the loved ones come through and say, I should have said this, but now it's too late. I should have told you how much I loved you, and now it's too late. I should have forgiven you, and now it's too late. I should have asked forgiveness, and it's too late, you know. And so I said, you know what? Why do we have to wait until it's too late? We could create peace right here, right now. So what I did was I conducted an experiment with whoever wanted to come. And a good way of doing a life review would be thinking about all the loved ones in your life who you really love, like say your family, your close family, your mom, your dad, your husband, wife, children, whatever. And see, try to look through their eyes one at a time, how you are affecting them, if that makes sense. How are you affecting them? Don't, you know, like for an example, I was going through a divorce at the time of the experiment. So it was easy for me to say, you know, to blame other people and so forth. But that's not the way it is. I tried to see through my ex-husband's eyes, You know, how did I affect him? Right? And how we do this is you write a letter to the other person and try to, you know, because it takes time to gather the information. Okay. So when I was looking through my ex-husband's eyes, I totally saw it. He's an attorney, and here I am, a medium, an airy fairy medium. So can you understand why the two of us just didn't, we're not equal on the same wavelength, let's say. So nobody's to blame. You know, I wasn't blaming him. I wasn't blaming myself. I was able to see through his eyes, and I was able to create peace in his life and mine and my children's eyes as well. Because no one, and, you know, when I wrote letters to my children, I wrote letters to all of them saying how, you know, how much I love them. And I'm so sorry that this divorce has affected you. Mm. I never intended to hurt you, but I did nonetheless. And in so doing, they saw that I was able to see through their eyes, I hope you follow, and created amazing peace in my life. And I didn't have to wait until I died to go through that.
I guess, it, certainly in terms of your ex-husband, it would only really work, though, if you reconciled yourself with him after the fact. Presumably you did.
Yes.
I don't mean got back together with him, but, you know, you had declared a truce, had peace with him.
Well, yes. I try to the best of my ability to create peace in everyone, in every single person I encounter. You know, I really do. And sometimes it's not easy, but I have to tell you, it's not the snake bite that kills us. Mm-hmm. It's the venom that's left behind. I'm sure you've heard that saying.
I haven't, and I'm really pleased I've heard it, because I'm going to write it down and I'm going to use it myself, maybe on the radio this week. Now, yes. We have to talk, otherwise your publisher's not going to be happy at all, about your book, We Consciousness.
Yes.
There is a man who influenced you, and he's a man who I know because I believe that I interviewed him at the very beginning of me doing these shows, and that's 14 years ago. I believe that he was either, I don't think he was on the podcast, I have to go back through the archives, but I believe he was a guest on my radio show probably in the mid-2000s, probably 2004, 2005-ish. His name, Dr. Wayne W. Dyer, who...
Yes.
Apparently, and I didn't know this until I started reading about you and the material provided by your publisher about the book, he is the man who had an enormous influence on you. Tell me about him and talk to me about that influence.
Yes, I was a huge fan of his books. He writes, they call him the father of inspiration. And he wrote many books about how to, you know, you could create the life that you want by just changing your thoughts and the feelings inside of you. Positive thoughts, etc. And I didn't know him personally, but I went to his lectures and I read his books and I was a huge fan. So when I say he, through a series of synchronistic events, what happened, amazing. And if you would like, I could share these, what happened. His family was brought into my, right into my vicinity. And I started to receive messages for him. If you would like for me to share how it happened, because it's truly incredible.
Yeah, sure. I mean, he was still here. He was still alive at that point. Is that right?
Oh, no, after he passed.
This is he passed. Sorry, I was being dense there. Okay.
No, that was me. I didn't say that clearly. So after he passed, I didn't feel the world was going to be the same. And I felt I had to do something for his family. His daughter, Serena, had been on my radio show. I have a radio show called The Angel Quest Show. And she had been on my show a few months before his passing to promote her book, Don't Die With Your Music Still In You, which, by the way, it's a wonderful book. And I had her contact information. So I emailed her and I said, Serena, I'm so sorry to hear about your dad. You know, please know he truly is okay and would want you to be too. Ask him to come to you in a dream and to wake you up after the dream so you remember it. Ask for signs, exactly what I was saying to you before. And I said to her, Serena, you know, I did write a book. It's called Your Life After Their Death. And it teaches you how to raise your vibration so you'll be able to hear him, how to ask for signs, how to ask, you know, and all sorts of things, and how to heal after his loss so that you feel better. And I'd love to send you a copy, is what I said to her. So shortly afterwards, she emailed me back and said she would love to send for me to send her a copy, and I did. It just so happened that I was scheduled to speak for an event for my publisher 3 days later. In Orlando, Florida, in the United States, about life after death. And the day before, they were going to do a tribute to Dr. Dyer. So I went a day earlier to go to that tribute, and there was a, I hope you follow, you're following this so far.
I am.
Okay. So I'm sitting on a bus, and on the bus there were my publishers, all the authors from Hay House, as well as Wayne Dyer's family, that were going from the hotel over to the conference center, where the event was going to be held. And there was one seat available, and it happened to be next to me. And in walks Serena Dyer, and she sits next to me. And I, you know, as soon as she sat down, I said, "Serena, I'm so sorry about your dad." And we chatted. And it pretty much the first encounter was just what we're talking about now, you know, telling her to ask her dad for signs, et cetera. And that was pretty much it. You know, so we went to the event. And when the event was over, I decided I didn't want to go back on the bus because, as I confided in you before, I don't, I'm insecure. I don't love myself as I should, but I felt I was not significant enough to be on that bus because on that bus were all my favorite authors.
Meanwhile, and you felt you weren't worthy.
Yes, correct. And meanwhile, I'm an author too. And I felt, no, this is Wayne Dyer's family. I said, no, I'm going to walk back to the hotel room. So as I'm walking back to the hotel room, I'm saying, you know, I'm so insignificant. I'm saying to myself, I'm so insignificant. And as I'm saying that, I heard him for the first time. And he said, "Get out of your own way. Get out of your own way." Soon as I heard that, I said, "Wayne, if that's really you, you have to give me a without a doubt sign. Here I am, right? To let me know that it's really you." And I continued to walk, and I said, "How may I serve?" And he said, "You're already serving." I said, "Fine. How may I serve more?" So I went to the hotel room, and as I got to the hotel room, there was something very itchy inside of my shirt. And I reached in to see what it was, and I grabbed out a sticker that had somehow attached itself to my shirt. And how I know it was not there before, on the bottom of the sticker, it said Disney World, and I had not been to Disney World.
You could have acquired it on the bus, I guess.
It could have happened, but on the sticker itself, it said W-E. Uh-huh. And I took that to mean Wayne, first letter, last letter of his name, because oftentimes when I receive messages, they give me first letter, last letter. And then I felt him, and he said, "Is that good enough?" Little did I know it was so much more than that. Subsequently, the family came to see me. They flew in from Florida to New Jersey, and, you know, we gave them all very profound, very specific messages, and I spoke to them over, he has 8 children as well as a wife, and throughout the next couple of years, I called them at specific times when things were going on. I don't know if we have time to talk about that, but in any case, he was so excited to talk about the we consciousness and the afterlife, and the we consciousness is the interconnectivity of everyone and everything, and how what one does to oneself or another, how it affects the whole, and so forth. And he gave me 33 concepts about the we consciousness. But when he comes through, and when he talked about, I hope you're following it. It's a little bit difficult to understand.
No, it's not. I mean, it's an astonishing story.
Yes.
It's amazing, isn't it, that his family obviously took to you, clearly believed that you were communicating with him, and that, I guess, would be a process for any family. It's not easy to get accepted like that, but it sounds like they accepted you.
Yes. Well, that first meeting, I was very nervous when they first came to see me. And when I say we need very detailed messages, we can't just say, "Oh, he's here and he loves you very much." It has to be very specific. And in the appendix of We Consciousness, we have every single one of them saying what had happened, what they wanted to share, because they were very personal messages. But I can share a few of them, which so that you understand that it truly was him.
Please do.
Yes. At that first meeting, you know, he came through and he spoke to each of them differently. He spoke to Sage in a different way, one of his youngest child. He spoke to Serena more forcefully and Sky in a more softer way. And they all said that's the way he spoke to them. But Serena, when he said to her, he said that she was pregnant and he was showing me fireworks. And she said, no, I'm not pregnant. You know, she said, "I just had my daughter, Sailor. I'm not pregnant." But to make a long story short, she went home and took a pregnancy test. And she was indeed in the family way due on the 4th of July.
The 4th of July, okay.
So right here in the United States, we have the 4th of July.
Oh, I know.
All of that. I'll share two other ones that they share, so I could share this with you. His oldest daughter, Tracy, one morning, 6 a.m., Wayne tells me to contact Seiji at that moment. And I'm saying, Wayne, it's 6 o'clock in the morning. I'm not contacting her. And he said, contact her now. Contact her now. I said, oh, my gosh. So I texted her, and I said, Tracy, I'm so sorry, but your dad is here. May I call you? And she immediately responded and said, yes, exclamation, exclamation. So I called her and I said, before you say anything, he's telling me to tell you that, yes, he can hear you, but you can hear him. I said, what does that mean? And she started to cry and she said she had just woken up from a dream. And in the dream, she was yelling at her dad saying, can't you hear me? Can't you hear me? And he had said, I can hear you, but you can't hear me. So, and let me say...
So they were asking you to be Lily Tomlin, to be the telephone operator and connect.
It would be at the most, the craziest time. One day I was at my office and I went to the bank and I came back from the bank and there was an email that I had sent to his son, Sands, a year earlier, had just somehow appeared on my screen. And again, I said, okay, Wayne, you're doing it again. What do you want? You want me to contact Sands? So I texted him and I said, Sands, what's going on? Your email from a year ago just appeared on my screen. And he texted me back and he said he was sitting on a plane. He was going from Florida to Hawaii and he was moving to Hawaii. And at that particular time, he asked his dad, was he making the right decision, to give him a sign to let him know it's the right decision to move. With that, the email came on my screen. I texted him and gave him the information that it's a wonderful opportunity for you at that particular time. That's the type of messages that he gave. So he was loud in life. I don't know if for any of who follow Wayne Dyer, and he's even louder now that he made his transition.
Hmm. How would you describe him then? Just for people who'd never heard of him. I mean, I had a connection with him, albeit a brief one, but how would you describe him? What was he?
He was, he spoke in front of thousands of people, you know, auditorium room filled with people. And he was wonderful. He was very loud. You know, he reached many people. And here in America, you know, they just, you know, he was on public television.
He was kind of Dale Carnegie character, I think.
Yes, exactly. Mm. So exactly as I was saying before, because he was so loud in life, he remains the same now that he made his transition. And we wouldn't have expected it to be any other way. And for those who do know him in the United States, there are so many followers of him. It's not just that he comes to Karen Noe. I want to tell everyone that. Because I was on the same vibration, because I was, you know, I asked him later on, I said, why me? Why did you come to me? Why did you choose me? And he said, why did you choose me? I said, okay. And then he showed me the St. Francis connection when I started to feel... you know, I told you the story before. He loved St. Francis as well, and that we were both Hay House authors. And the fact that I guess I was very much into peace, because this book is all about how to create inner and outer peace. So
I don't expect you to give me all 33 principles in the book for living peacefully and living better that are channeled, you say, from Wayne Dyer?
So what happened was, at one particular time, he said he was going to join forces with a group consciousness called the We Guides, in which he was going to be coming together. It would be hard to differentiate him from everyone else. So whereas he still came through for his family and friends, he came through as a group consciousness called the We Guides to give me the 33 concepts of the We Consciousness. And I asked them, why did you choose 33? And they revealed that 33 symbolizes divine guidance and the spiritual uplifting of all of creation. So they gave me 33 concepts. The most important truth is concept one, is that we are all one. And our oneness encompasses everything and everyone. including God.
But that, of course, is not new. If you ask a Hindu, then they'll tell you exactly the same. We are all one.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And we are. But it's hard to feel that connection when we're in the physical body. Because, you know, as I said before, you're over there, I'm over here. Our bodies are differentiating, you know, separating us from each other. But after you leave the physical body, you're able to feel that connection immediately. So that's why it's important that they were trying to explain whatever you do to yourself or another, it truly does affect the whole. And whatever you're focusing upon grows energetically. So it's really important to focus on what you want and the many blessings in your life and in the world around you, because the more you focus upon that, the more energy of that expands. So if you're focusing on what's wrong, that expands as well, the energy of what's wrong.
Okay, what about those people who in this life have not treated other people particularly well? Maybe they've, I mean, you know, from very extreme cases, which, you know, serial killers and people like that, perhaps bad bosses who've treated staff unthinkingly and uncaringly and appallingly. I've known a few of those. You know, what happens to them then if they, once they're assimilated into the oneness of all things, you know, how's that reconciled?
They're going to have quite a life review. They're going to feel how they've affected each of those people as if they are that each person. So that in itself, just to feel that as if it's happening to them, they're going to feel that. Okay, so that is what they're going to experience. And that's why I tell people, go through your life review now. See how you're affecting each person on this planet now, so you don't have to go through that after you make your transition.
Right, so you can actually make a deal, you can make an arrangement whereby if you rectify it all now, you try to, it's not going to be so bad on you when you cross over.
Correct. And in doing so, you'll create peace in your own life and the lives around you. So again, you have everything to gain and nothing to lose by doing this.
What about hell? Does hell exist?
If you would call that hell, hell does not really exist, because once you do reach the other side, you feel your oneness with God and the angels. And whereas you are going through that life review and you will experience that, you will feel that interconnectivity and you will feel God and the angels. You'll just be at that level of saying, seeing the bigger perspective of saying, well, I should have done differently. And if you decide to come back on the planet, you decide to live a life where you can learn whatever you didn't learn in a better way. So if you need to learn compassion, you'll come back into a life where you really need to learn compassion, or, you know, people being compassionate to you, or you need to be compassionate to other people as well.
Believing what you believe and doing what you do. Now, your photograph that I'm looking at right now is a very youthful you. So it's going to be a long time before you have to confront any of this. But have you got a plan for when you cross over to whatever comes next? Things that you want to do when you get there?
When I get to the other side?
Yeah.
I'm trying to do everything I can right here and now, as much as I can, and serve. Every morning I wake up and I say, how may I serve myself and others? Because I used to say, how may I serve? And it was always for everybody else. But I've learned, and you should also, because you don't treat yourself, as you said, you don't, you know, with the respect that you deserve, how may I serve myself and others? We do that now. And once we get to the other side, you reach the same level that you were here on Earth. So if we keep continuing to elevate to a higher consciousness right here on Earth, we'll reach that level in an instant after we pass, and we could help people in ways we never could before when we were in a physical body, when we were on the other side.
And as for Wayne Dyer, who was a remarkable man that I know, what kind of a difference is he trying to make then? He's obviously trying to work through you, and not only through you, to achieve something. So what's he trying to do?
So now he could reach more people where he is now, whereas he only could reach, if he was in an auditorium room filled with people, now he could reach millions of like minds, whoever are looking for creating a positive difference on the earth, whoever's looking for inner and outer peace. You know, oftentimes we could be experiencing messages from him, and we won't realize it. You know, you'll just know something without, a gut feeling will say, do this, do that. You know, oftentimes our loved ones, the ascended masters, Wayne Dyer, they're speaking to us as thoughts, as I said before, to just trust these feelings that just pop into your head for no reason, and do whatever you're told to do. even though it doesn't make sense.
Problem is, in this world, even if you decide to live this better life and be at peace with all things and all the rest of it, sadly, everybody else is not working to that playbook.
Yes, that's correct. So what you want to do is never lower your perspective to look down at... I talk about this story in my book, We Consciousness. I'd love to share here. There was a gentleman named T.D. Jakes, and he was talking about a giraffe and a turtle. Now, the giraffe's only able to see high in the trees, and he eats the leaves up in the trees, where the turtle can only see what's on the ground. If the giraffe lowers its neck to see what's going on with the turtle, it could actually kill itself because the blood will rush to its head. Mm-hmm. I think that analogy is to say that we don't want to lower our perspective to understand what the other people are going through. What we want them to do is to raise them up higher and higher. And we don't want to force our opinions on them as well, because the turtle's only able to see what it can see right now. And to force them, they just won't be able to do it. So we need to raise their vibration without lowering our perspective in so doing, if that makes sense.
In your career, if I can call it that, can you think of the greatest example of somewhere where you believe you've helped someone by passing on some information? Maybe we've already heard that story, but is there one that you're really proud of within?
Well, I've had some people that were ready to commit suicide, and because they lost their loved one. And when their loved one comes through with very specific messages, they tell me how I changed their whole life. And from that point, they know without a doubt that their loved ones truly are okay. And not only their loved ones, but that they will be joining them, because they know that this world is not all there is, because there was tangible proof of that. So if I could be a vehicle of love and service to help people to understand that. But again, as I was saying before, my purpose is to teach people how to do what I'm doing, because we all can do it. You just have to trust yourself, set the intention, and then be patient and wait. And the signs and messages will come when you least expect it, but not as a voice, not as an apparition.
I'm going to sound like a real hard heart skeptic here, but do you ever worry that perhaps you're sometimes interfering in people's lives and their lives should be allowed to take their own course without you interceding?
Oh, of course. That's why if they're coming to see me, they're asking for help. I would never stop. You know, there are programs here in the United States of shows where mediums stop people in the middle of a supermarket and give messages. I would never do that. You know, if somebody's coming to see me, then their intention is to try to connect with their loved one. I would never offer advice or any, you know, and I'm not here to change anybody's mind. So if they're asking me questions, then of course, you know, that's where I come in, and that's where I share the messages. They come to a class, I teach them how to do it, and so forth.
I've known a guy called Christian Dion, who is a British medium, psychic medium, who now lives in Los Angeles, and I've known him for most of my adult life as somebody I've interviewed and just kind of known. I have him on my show. He says that it's a gift, if you can call it that, he says he's got, and you're saying that you have, that doesn't really shut off. So you can be standing behind somebody in an airline queue waiting to board the plane, and you're going to pick something up from the person in front.
No.
Does that happen for you?
No, I have learned to turn it off. Absolutely, I would be going crazy. When it first started happening to me, right when I had received that light, right after that experience with the light and the Lucha Lucina experience, I started to receive the messages from angels and deceased loved ones. And it was very difficult. You know, I'd be in my bed and I open my eyes and there would be a deceased loved one trying to connect. So at that particular time, I said only when the intention is there, or if it's an emergency, please. And they do, they respect what I'm saying. And if it's an emergency, that's a different story. I have since, you know, I've worked with the police department, and there was a missing boy. And I told him, you know, I felt him, but I was not going to tell his parents and give them, you know, tell them. I didn't want to be the one to do it until they found him. So I was talking to him in my thoughts, and I said, when they find you, you let me know, and I will call them immediately. So I was sitting there, and he came through, and I was in the middle of talking to my, at that time was my husband and my son, and he said, they found me, call my mom now. At that particular time, I called his mom, and she said, how did you know? I said, he's here. But see, that was an emergency, and he came through with the messages that, you know, how he passed, et cetera. But that was an emergency. If I had to live that way, not only that, I wouldn't want to interfere in somebody. Suppose somebody doesn't want to hear from their loved one. That's interfering with their, it's not up to me to do that. So, no, I've learned to turn it off.
And, of course, you have to have tremendous, although, you say that, like a lot of us, you don't entirely or haven't in your life entirely believed in yourself. But, there is always the possibility you could be wrong and that could do harm. I mean, that's a great responsibility.
Yes, but I don't see it doing harm at all. I see the piece that, let's say, the worst possible case scenario, they feel their loved ones, but suppose it's not them, which we know it is. At least they're at peace now and they feel good. They know that, they are getting the signs from their loved ones, et cetera. It's bringing peace in their lives. So it can cause harm. The only person that I would say would cause harm if they're a born-again Christian and they say, from the Bible that it's a wrong thing to do to connect with your loved ones, in which case they wouldn't come to see me because that wouldn't be in their frame of reference, if that makes sense. They would say that it's, I don't know. But the closer I become to God and the angels, the more I receive messages. That's in my own life. People ask me if I receive negative entities. People ask me, and I right away say no. Because when you turn on the light, the darkness goes away, and I am not on that vibration. I don't want to hear from anyone who's of a lower vibration, a bad spirit, so forth. So, no, I have not encountered that type of spirit.
Well, Karen, we've covered some territory here. I find you fascinating to speak with, and thank you very much for taking time for me. Is there anything that we should have talked about that we didn't?
Just to trust the power within you, and we all have source energy within us. If you understood that, the power within you, you could create miracles in your life and in the lives around you. So just trust and remember who you are.
I haven't looked, but I'm guessing you have a website and a big presence online. What's the website?
It's KarenNoe.com. That's KarenNoe.com.
Well, Karen Noe, not Karen Noe. Thank you very much for this.
Thank you very much. Have a great day.
Karen Noe, not Karen Noe. On this edition of The Unexplained, let me know what you think about her. I'll put a link to her work on my website, theunexplained.tv. And as I always say, we have more great guests in the pipeline. If you have a guest suggestion to make, go to my website, theunexplained.tv, and you can send me a suggestion from there and tell me what you think about the show and make a donation if you'd like to. So until next we meet, my name is Howard Hughes. I am in London. This has been The Unexplained, and please, whatever you do, stay safe, stay calm. And above all, please stay in touch. Thank you very much. Take care. Bye-bye.